Everybody, welcome to the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. We're here for another great episode. We're going to be doing the Monday Night Nitro retrospective. It's about the anniversary for this one. The September 9th episode in 1996 of Monday Night Nitro. There was a lot going on, a lot to get into. I'm, of course, your handsome host, Daniel Hummer.
Absolutely gorgeous.
That hurts, Clintus. I'm here with Clintus. I'm here with Eric and Doug.
Yo.
How's everyone doing tonight?
Pretty good. The 25th anniversary was yesterday. Just wanted to mention that.
Yes, sir. Before we get on all that, you want to hit some plugs, Doug?
Sure. Listen to Boxman and Spark, the Dirt Sheet Dudes, every Wednesday for the Dirt Sheet Dudes podcast, every Friday for the Hollywood Hangout. About 10:20 Eastern time on Wednesdays, right after wrestling. And at 11:30 p.m. Eastern time on Fridays. So make sure you check them out. Listen to us Fridays at 6:30 p.m. Eastern time here on blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted. Next Friday, there will not be a show because Eric, Daniel, and I have a pretty busy day on Saturday. So we're going to skip next Friday's show. But in 2 weeks, we're going to be back with the company retrospective on WCW's 1996 through 1998. And then in 3 weeks, on October 1st, we're going to be doing the AEW company retrospective. And then, of course, that'll all conclude on October 15th when we do the AEW WCW 96 through 98 comparison. Where we discuss the similarities, the differences, and basically just kind of explain why we think, you know, they're both kind of in the same category.
Pretty much.
And then on October 22nd, we're going to be counting down the top 20 greatest wrestlers of all time. The poll right now is in facebook.com/group/oldschoolwrestling. If you want to vote on it, there's about 138 options.
I have to put in other groups. So I'll do that this weekend.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so if you haven't voted yet, please make sure you do. It's got a lot of interesting names in there. And also, obviously, check us out, facebook.com/group/oldschoolwrestling. Got a lot of stuff for the podcast in there, a lot of spirited debates. And also, we're kind of like, we've kind of got the group back to, you know, where it should be. Cutting out all the bad. So.
The assholes.
Yeah. Pretty much. We've been kind of cracking down lately. All right. Join us tomorrow night, probably, what, around 6 or 7?
Yeah.
For
7.
Unscripted. Huh?
7 is better for me.
Good for you. So probably what, 6?
No, 7.
Wow. The disrespect.
Oh.
No, we'll do 7 o'clock tomorrow.
Thanks, Daniel.
You're welcome.
90 days ago, you weren't even part of the show. All right. So Saturday, tomorrow night around 7 p.m. Eastern time, we'll be Unscripted Unlimited. We got a lot of stuff planned there. So join us for that. Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern time for Scaredy Cats, Daniel and Mindy. What are you two doing on Sunday?
The movie 13 Ghosts.
Awesome.
Right. So look out for that. And then next Saturday in Merchantville, New Jersey.
We're not going to be there.
Oh, fuck. In Merchantville, New Jersey, Eric, Daniel, and I, along with our ride, will be in Merchantville, New Jersey for the Merchantville Toy Street Fair. It's going to be from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Of course, we'll be there actually at 7 in the morning setting up. So just come out. We're going to be selling some toys. We might be doing a show. But I'm not sure yet. I'm going to try to talk to the guy and see if maybe the guy running the street fair and see if maybe like he'll let us interview him or something like at the toy fair.
That'd be cool.
So, you had to plug something for somebody, right?
Yeah. Make sure to check out my boy, Sean, on Twitch. He's starting up a Twitch channel. He does a lot of streaming content, does a lot of GTA stuff. Sneaky Fetty, make sure to check it out. He's got a YouTube channel. Make sure to check that out as well. I forgot the name of it, but make sure to check him out. Sneaky Fetty on Twitch. Make sure to check him out on YouTube. And, he's got a lot of good content coming. And he's about to start posting a lot more on his YouTube, too. So make sure to check him out. And, yeah, good guy.
He's all right. Don't really like the company, Steve, so.
I don't talk shit about smarking them.
Why not? I do.
We're doing plugs, man. Come on.
Yeah. I'm done with the plugs.
Okay, so what are we doing now?
You're the host.
You told me to plug at the end. Fucking killing me here. All right, the go-home show for Fall Brawl. We got a lot to go on. We got Super Calo versus Pat Tanaka to start off the bat. And interestingly enough, Tanaka actually used Goldberg theme song before Goldberg even debuted.
Yeah. Well, that was...
I didn't notice that. No.
Yeah, that was basically... That was... Turner and, like, the WCW music department had, like, a whole select number of entrance themes that they could use. And, like, so what's funny is that, like, a lot of the different, like, job guys or, like, guys in, like, 96 would use theme songs. And then, like, if they were to, you know, be fired or whatever, then, like, the next year if a guy debuted, like, that person would take over the theme song. Like Jimmy Graffiti, who was around for a couple months in like 96, 97, he used the theme song that Kurt Hennig would eventually use.
Oh, wow.
John Tenta, at the end of the show, used the theme song that Jericho would use.
Oh, wow.
So, those were just the theme songs that were available. Because... At the time, too, WCW really wasn't known for, like, creating, like, original music.
Oh.
Yeah, so I just thought that was interesting that Tanaka had fucking Goldberg's theme song. But this takes place in Columbus, Georgia at the Civic Center. We obviously know the date. Super Calo, I was never a huge fan of him. What's your favorite Super Calo match, Doug?
I really don't have one because I really didn't think he was that good. I mean, he was a jobber luchador.
He won here.
Well, yeah, because he was getting ready for the title match that he was going to have with Ray Jr. at the Fall Brawl. But, I mean, so he got brought in. Conan was basically the one responsible for all the luchadors coming in. But yeah, I didn't really have a favorite Super Calo match. I mean, I kind of liked the theme song and all that he used, and like I did like some of the moves that he did. But he wasn't really like my favorite.
Gotcha. Clint, did you happen to check this match out? I mean, it's a short one, but what did you think?
I didn't really enjoy it whatsoever. I didn't like it. It wasn't a good opener for me. Yeah, it didn't really catch my attention. No.
Yeah, I felt the same. It was just there. It was meh.
Absolutely. I mean, it was all right. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of either of these guys. I liked Tanaka back in the day, though.
Yeah, he was good back in the day when he was part of either Bad Company in the AWA or the Orient Express in WWE.
Yeah. And let's talk about this, because during the commentary, did it take away from you or did it make it for you, Eric, that they focus so much on NWO throughout the whole thing?
I think it was kind of overkill, kind of, that they kept driving the Sting turn and turn, or Sting going to turn, is he going to turn? I think it was kind of overkill just rewatching it. But
yeah,
it was fine.
I mean,
maybe a little overkill.
Yeah. What do you think? Do you think it was a little overkill, Quinneth, or do you think it helped build it up?
I think it overkilled it. I think that's one thing I have to say. WCW do have like big moments like this. They want to just focus on that moment throughout the whole show and really takes away from anything else that's happening in the ring, out the ring, other story plot, all subtitles. They make it seem like during the matches, that one big plot hole has to be the main focus throughout the whole show, no matter what else is going on.
Exactly.
And that's what made it really hard to watch the show.
Yeah. There's a segment later on we'll talk about that they did in the middle of a match.
So this is actually Super Kala's debut.
Yeah. Well, it's his debut on Nitro. He wrestled, I believe, on Pro like the weekend before.
Okay.
It's
crazy he debuted. He's already getting the title shot. The Fall Brawl.
Yeah, that was the weird thing is that like they would bring these guys in because it was just Bischoff was – had the relationship with Conan. Conan had the relationship with AAA. When we do the retrospective on 96 through 98, I'm actually going to send all you guys like a bunch of like YouTube videos. I'm not going to send it to you. Try to get you to maybe watch a couple of them or whatever. Yeah. Of like the not necessarily the build up, but like the C&D shows like Worldwide and Pro.
Uh-huh.
So that way, like, you could see, like, all the guys that were, like, on the roster at the time.
Yeah.
So, like, you'll have a feel of, like, who we're all going to be talking about. Because I'm Worldwide, like, uh-huh. Everybody, like, it was mainly, like, mid-cards and jobbers.
Yeah.
Kalo and Tanaka were on there, like, quite a bit. But, no, with Kalo, and yeah, Kalo made his debut on the Pro because back – in that late 96, before Pro switched time slots, Pro was actually still considered like a big deal because like Flair would still be on it, Sting would still be on it, Savage would still be on it.
Really?
But by like November, December, it was mainly just used for the mid cards. So like every week you'd have a main event of like Brad Armstrong versus Dean Malenko or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is not, I'm not knocking either guy. It's just,
You weren't going to see Nash and Hall chilling on Pro.
No. So Super Kala made his debut on Pro. Tanaka had been around in WCW since he started working tapings in February. He started working the worldwide tapings.
Okay.
And did he always play a Asian, even though he was Hawaiian? I mean, in AWA, they knew he was, they knew he was Hawaiian, because in AWA he actually cut a promo.
Really?
Or he actually cut a bunch of promos. I mean, he spoke English a little bit in WWF too when they would let him.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he pretty much played the Asian.
Okay. So now a match that I actually got more enjoyment out of than I thought I would. The Nasty Boys against Rogu and C-3PO or whatever the fuck his name is now, PCO.
He's calling the Amazing French Canadians.
Is that what they were called?
Yes.
The Amazing French Canadians. What were they? What was the good version in WWE?
Quebecers.
Yeah, the Quebecers against the Nasty Boys. One of my favorite tag teams of all time. Sags and Knobs. It was short. It was just about like 4 minutes, which a lot of these Nitro matches were because you had to keep doing shit about the NWO for some reason. But I actually got a lot of enjoyment out of this. I thought it was pretty good. I do. The one thing I will say is the after promo, oh, my God. And I met, was it Knobs that cut it? Who's the blonde one?
Knobs.
So it was Sags that, I like Jerry Sags. We met Jerry Sags. We met Brian Knobs. They're nice guys.
Yeah.
But
they're funny as all hell.
Yeah, they're hilarious. His promo was so awful, though. When they were asking him if they were NWO or WCW, the crowd started chanting, "Nasties, nasties." Like, they started the promo into it, and then he just started talking, and then just, like, deflated. Like, no one said anything. No one reacted. No one gave a shit. And then Brian Knobs tried to start, like, talking all silly and crazy so he could hype the crowd back up. But it's like, I've never really seen that where you go into a promo and the crowd's invested and then you uninvest them.
Yeah.
You know what's actually funny is that, like, Sags was the one that early in 97, he was actually involved in that big shoot with Scott Hall. And where, like, they kind of got into it and Hall blasted Sags in the back of the head with a chair. And it was one of those, like, bowling chairs.
Yeah.
And then Sags retaliated by throwing the chair back at Scott Hall, and it hit him right in the teeth.
Oh,
and then, like, there was a big thing. And then Sags actually took 3 years off. He took 3 years off, and Knobs actually got suspended for 2 years.
Yeah, but when Knobs came back, he was good. I like Hardcore Division Brian Knobs.
I actually like that, too.
He was the only, like, saving grace about that shitty division.
Yeah. But no, like, the Nasties, here's the thing. They were still very much, when they came over in 93, they were over. They were basically over till 95. Then they cooled off a lot. But then the stuff with Public Enemy started to happen.
Yeah.
So that kind of warmed them back up.
Yeah, the one thing I will, and I will give them some compliments, because I like WCW. And one of those is, I think the tag team division was always far superior. I know we had that boom in 2000, 2001, and, you know, Dudley's, Edge and Christian, Jeff Hardy. But before that, I mean, like, you had Public Enemy, you had the Nasties, you had Harlem Heat, you had the Steiners, you had Hall and Nash when they wanted to team together. Keep going, Doug. I know you got more.
Faces of Fear, American Males, High Voltage, the Canadians, you know, the Horsemen, any two of the four.
Yeah.
Armstrong.
Sting and Luger for a while.
Sting and Luger for the longest time. Like I said, the Armstrongs, Dick Slater and Mike Enos.
So, now we're getting into deep cuts, but you used to have, I mean, back then you really had a deep fleshed out tag team roster.
Yeah.
That's what I liked about this is because they really did have something for everybody. Like, the focus on the NWO was annoying. I'll agree with you guys that it was overkill. And I don't like commentators talking during the match about not the match anyway, whatever it's about. It kind of reminded me of, you guys remember when Shawn Michaels lost his smile and he did that promo and whatever?
Yeah. Well, the whole, like, three segments after he did it, that's all J.R. King was talking about. Even though there was an Intercontinental title match going on, I'm pretty sure. There was a nice tag team match, but all they're talking about
Didn't they do that during Undertaker's match, too, when Undertaker was wrestling Savio?
Yeah. And all they're talking about Shawn Michaels is his fucking smile. I don't care. You know, and, like, the NWO's cool, but it's like we want to know what's going on in the ring, too. That's what commentators are for. Make this kind of seem real and get us into it and talk about the fucking match.
Oh, you're really going to hate later on when we talk about what happened between in the match what's going on with Faces of Fear and Public Enemy.
Yeah.
Eric was alluding to it earlier, I believe. Right, Eric? That a no?
I'm not sure if he's there. Eric?
I didn't like Eric? That.
Yeah.
I'm there.
We can save it for later, but I agree with you guys. I talking during a match about something that's not the match, you can do it a little segment, be like, oh, watch out for later. But when you're just having conversations about something that has nothing to do with the match, I get you're trying to plug other shit on the show, but it is overkill. I want to get your thoughts on this tag team match.
I want to put it this way. The matches for this Nitro were very weak. It's only one match I could probably think of this that happened right on, but I couldn't get into none of the matches into it whatsoever. I enjoy mainly the promo after the match. Yes, I enjoy it. The matches itself, I just couldn't. It was hard to get into. Especially on this night of about the whole Sting betrayal. I mean, when you focus the show on one topic, and that main topic is the storyline throughout each match, during a commercial break, before ad breaks, after ad breaks, during whatever, it takes away from the whole show in my eyes, and it's hard. It makes you not want to watch what's going on, because you're hammering one idea in your head throughout the whole night, which is not going to get into until 10 minutes left of the show or ever get started.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you said it the other day, too, that this is not a wrestling-heavy show.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that, like, Nitro, around this time, like, when they started, I want to say probably from starting maybe here, because that Nitro that we did in July, one after Bash at the Beach.
Yeah.
Like, the matches on there, like, some of the matches on there were actually really good.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, there's certainly good wrestling to be found.
All right. But, like, let's say, like, starting here, so starting in September 96 till probably about maybe April or May of 97, nobody really gave a damn about the wrestling matches that were on Nitro. You just wanted to see the stories.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, there was still, like, some wrestling. Like, you still got the big stars, but, like...
And because of the cruiserweights and stuff, like, you did have good matches. I think this is kind of a select experience. I know, like, they did this a lot and stuff like this, and they made it more about the story a lot. But I've seen a lot of good wrestling on Nitro.
Yeah.
They've had better athletes than WWE at the time, point blank.
Yeah, and, like... But also, I think they were also kind of poor in, like, where they put the matches.
Sometimes, yeah.
Like, with their segments. Like, on this Nitro, you know, you use the opening match for Nitro for Super Calo, who, unless if people watch the pro, they have no idea who the fuck he is.
Yeah.
So, I think it's just, it's segment placement, I think. Because, like, they had a lot of talent.
Yeah.
They had a lot of guys on the roster. Around this time, they had about 90-something guys on this fucking roster. So, like, yeah. I guess it just depended on, like, who they felt like putting on TV that week.
But I will give you a moment. Go ahead, Quinn.
But I was going to say, but isn't this also a time you got to realize, I think, this is like 3 months into them finally going from an hour just to 2 hours for Nitro. We didn't hit the 3-hour stage yet, too. They just started a two-hour Nitro.
Right. But yeah, and once they got to 3 hours, like that was it. The third hour actually gave them more time to do stuff. I actually enjoyed when Nitro was 3 hours. Because some of the Nitro episodes, they actually kept my attention.
It's just too much, but I get what you're saying. Let's move on to the barn burner classic that is Scott Norton versus Sergeant Craig Pittman in a hold versus hold submission match. And Norton, this is actually to build up to his submission match with Ice Train at Fall Ball, correct?
Yep. Yes.
What are your thoughts on this one, Dougie?
I thought it was good build for Scott Norton, especially since Norton was facing a guy that was managed by Teddy Long, just like Ice Train was. I didn't like the finish when Ice Train just came out threw in the towel. And like Teddy Long's like, "What are you doing?" And Ice Train's just like, "I'm doing what you should be doing." And you know, Pittman got upset because this actually. Pittman was actually starting a heel turn.
Was he?
Yeah. I mean, it's a heel turn that went nowhere because he pretty much he stopped wrestling on Nitro by like March of 97. and here's another thing that's funny, right? And you guys will notice this like when I send you like those video clips of the Worldwides and the Pros. If a guy stops wrestling on Nitro by, like, you know, let's – all right, so we're in September here, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so September 96. So if a guy is no longer appearing on Nitro in September 96, that doesn't mean that he's not going to be on TV anymore because Worldwide and Pro tape so much shit ahead of time that, like, let's say, like – the Nasty Boys, they were pretty much done off of TV by January of 97 because of the issue with the Outsiders. I think by like March or February, they were actually still being featured on TV because that's how far in advance their stuff was taped. Like, I was watching something the other day. I was watching a match. It was billed as a world title match. It was in April of 96. It was Macho Man and Flair was defending as was the world champion.
Yeah.
Well, in April, right? Well, because the match was taped in late January, Savage is the one that came out with the belt. But and they tried to pan the camera away, but Savage is waving the belt around.
That's funny as fuck.
Yeah. So like it was for the world title. So it was still a world title match, but the guy challenging for the world title was the one that actually brought the title out to the ring. That just shows you how far in advance they tape their shit.
Yeah. Not Nitro, though. That was live.
Oh, yeah. No, Nitro and Saturday night, you know, for a time, too, because Saturday night they would usually tape during the week. They might tape, like, two episodes ahead of time. But that's it. Like, they would never do they didn't do marathon tapings for Saturday night anymore. But as far as this Norton-Pittman match goes, I mean, it was an okay match. I just...
The cheese in there, too. Sorry.
Pittman, like, to me, I never really got the Pittman character.
Yeah, I mean, Pittman, Colonel... Kirshner or whatever the fuck, just they're all poor man Sergeant Slaughters. There's one military gimmick, damn it, and you can't redo it, and you can't do it better. Sarge is the man. I'm sorry, I can't get into any. It's just another guy with fucking camo pants and boots. Like,
but here's the thing: they thought he was marketable. They gave him his own wrestling figure.
Wow, thinking a lot of people. I'm pretty sure like Curt Hawkins has a wrestling figure.
Well, I mean, in WCW, not everybody got a figure. WCW never made Arn Anderson a wrestling. Well, except for the old Galoob figures, you know, back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
But when they did that second toy line with the original San Francisco Toy Makers, Arn Anderson never got one.
Maybe he didn't want one.
But they gave one to Pittman. They made one of the Blue Bloods, for Christ's sake. But, yeah.
What did you think about this one, Eric?
I thought it was an all right segment. It's more of a build to the submission message. So I thought it was okay. Good story.
Yeah, and not a lot of people remember, too, Norton and Ice Train were a team. And they were a very good
yep.
team. And they kind of
Fire
broke
and
up.
Ice, right?
Yeah. And they kind of broke up, and but, like, this kind of took a backseat to everything else that was going on.
Scott Norton's the babyface, right? Or is he the heel?
He's supposed to be the heel, but people liked him.
And then not too long, he joined NWO anyway, right?
Yeah, he joined NWO because he was actually a really good friend of Bischoff's.
He was one of the guys running around with him. I was always like, who the fuck is that? Like, as a kid, it's like, I have no idea who this guy is.
What's funny about Scott Norton joining the NWO is that, like, he kind of fit that NWO mold of, like, he fit that NWO mold of, like, you know, he just, like, he's a badass that could beat the shit out of you. But... it's just like, why is this guy even about it? Because,
yeah, didn't
but sense. Also, too, he, you know, he kind of had that Kevin Nash mentality of, I don't do jobs.
Yeah. Well,
like, if he was wrestling a guy that could actually, like, beat him, it had to be double count up.
Norton?
Yeah.
Yeah, but where the fuck, I mean, that must be because he's friends with Eric, because who gives this man the right to make that call? He's not in anybody's top 50 ever. And I'm sorry for being a dick, Scott, but come on.
I think the only person I've ever seen him actually do, like, a clean job to has been probably Luger and Giant.
Kevin Nash has a bit of a right to be a diva. A bit, because of what he's done and what he's contributed. Scott fucking Norton, though.
Here's actually the thing. When we do the comparison in a few weeks, I'm comparing Scott Norton to Doc Gallows.
Okay.
But that's... in a few weeks.
Spoiler alert.
No, I don't remember it.
Since all these matches are like 2 minutes, we're not really going to give them ratings.
Okay.
There's not really a... doesn't make much sense. Now we got Joe Gomez. Eric, did you even know who Joe Gomez was going into this thing?
No.
Okay. He's going against who?
Was he just another jobber?
Yeah, he's another jobber. Juventud Guerrero, I want you to touch on him a little bit, Clint. That sounded kind of weird, but what did you think of Juve back in the day? Were you a fan?
No, not really. I was not a fan.
Was anybody?
I liked him.
That's like a true WCW fan out of all of us. I wasn't the I was a Raw person. I watched Raw, not WCW, not until the network came out.
See, I was a guy that flipped back and forth. I always took WCW.
Yeah, me too.
I flipped back and forth just because I like the variety. So can I kind of spoil what was kind of going on the other channel?
Yeah, if you want.
A little bit.
Oh, sure.
If you want to take the thunder away. Even though Thunder hasn't even started
right.
yet.
So, on the other channel, you had, I don't remember, like, all the matches, but for some reason, I remember the main event of the show being Undertaker versus Salvatore Sincere.
Barnburner.
Okay. And I just remember, and I think Farouk was wrestling Savio Vega.
That's a good match.
Yeah. So I remember those matches happening. But, like, at the time, too, so, like, I would obviously flip back and forth. Now, I was an Undertaker fan, so obviously I wanted to watch Undertaker, but Savage was always my guy.
Yeah.
So if you have Randy Savage versus John Tenta going up against Undertaker and Salvatore Sincere, I never minded seeing Earthquake get the shit beat out of him. So
yeah.
I'm going to watch Macho and Tenta.
Yeah.
But, like, it was very hard as a kid flipping back and forth, especially when you're at a TV. Well, first of all, I always stood in front of the TV anyway. Like, I never sat down.
Yeah.
So, like, hitting the button and it, see, this was always convenient because back home or, you know, back in the day, USA was always channel 36. And, no, TNT was always channel 36. USA was always channel 37. So, okay.
Oh, wow.
So, like,
you're just like up,
I was eating flip.
Exactly. But this Joe Gomez and Juventud Guerrero, Eric, I think it's pretty safe to say that neither one of these two are on the ballot for the countdown, right?
Right.
What's the countdown?
The top 20 greatest wrestlers of all time.
Oh.
I mean, there's 130.
Unless somebody added them.
Huh?
Unless somebody added them.
Oh, somebody added them. I'm sending them a check.
I do want to talk some good about Hoovy, though, because he was a damn good cruiserweight. And
he was still green here, but he got better.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, Gomez could not work the style.
No.
All right, trying to do the Hurricane Rana to get Gomez back in the ring, and Hoovy kind of slipped up. Gomez wouldn't go with him. Gomez just kind of monkey flipped himself back into the ring.
Now, it was supposed to be Psicosis and Conan at Fall Brawl for the Mexican Championship, right?
Correct.
Different from the Cruiserweight Championship, obviously. But they announced during this that Psicosis is hurt, and it's going to be Hoovy instead.
Right, because Psicosis injured his arm.
Gotcha.
That sucks.
I love Psicosis, too. He was one of my favorites.
Psicosis, Hoovy, Dragon, Ray.
Yeah.
That's
and
like
Eddie whole, Dean and shit.
Yeah.
The Mexican guys, yeah. Well,
of the Mexican guys, those four.
Except Ultimo's Japanese.
Well, I mean, he lived in Mexico City.
Yeah.
But, like, of, like, those four, like, luchadors. Or of all the luchadors, those four were the best.
And then you had your La Parca.
La Parca was good. Hector Garza, you know, for the cup of coffee he had in there.
Underrated.
He was severely underrated. I like the Vianos.
Yeah?
Yeah. They were
just... Yeah, sausages?
They actually... They could bump.
Who was really fucking good, too? Ah, his name escapes me.
Did you see Lager?
Who?
Jushin Thunder Liger.
Jushin Thunder Liger.
I was thinking of, but... When he was there, like, people forget that he wasn't, like, really there. Like, he was there, but he wasn't always really there.
Right.
He would just show up and do his big matches, and that's it.
Yeah. He just came in for the big painting.
Yeah, which is fine, and Jushin Thunder Liger is a fucking legend, for sure, but...
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he built the core of the Cruiserweight division as much as people think. I think that gets misguided with people's interpretation of what it was.
Yeah. True. Got a point there.
Well, yeah, just because, like, you associate him with all those guys, but they did a little more work in building the Cruiserweight division. He had the great matches, too, like on the first Nitro with Brian Pillman, Burnburn. He put on Burnburners, but... I wouldn't say that he's like the other four that you just named.
Right.
Now, after the match, everyone's favorite crooked referee, Nick Patrick, who's always played it. To me, he was always WCW's version of a heel Earl Hebner.
Right.
Because Earl Hebner would do fucked up calls too, but people loved him. Nick, well, besides the one really fucked up call, obviously, but... Nick Patrick, he was just such a good sleazy slime ball. He was a great crooked referee. I always thought he was an underrated character, especially when he was working for the NWO. Them having their own referee was cool to me. And this, when Oakland's kind of in his ass, I enjoyed this one, this little promo.
Oakland did not give a shit.
No, he would get pissed.
And then, like, Nick Patrick making all, you know, all the, like, crooked calls and stuff. And then, like, when he actually told Gene, he's like, if you keep pushing my buttons, I'm going to sue you. He's like, well, I hope it doesn't come to that. It's like, then Gene, shut the fuck up. If a guy tells you he's getting ready to sue you, wrap the interview.
Yeah. So that was cool. After this, we get Steiner and Luger, which is something I was excited for. Obviously, I mean, this moment in time made you cry as a youth.
Yeah.
Doug shed tears watching this. Not Steiner or Luger, obviously, but what happened after.
Yeah. Well, first of all, let's preface this by saying before Luger had the match, they did an interview. Now, the match, there was supposed to be a War Games match at Fall Brawl. It was the NWO, which was going to be Hall Nash Hogan and a mystery partner, versus Flair, Anderson, Luger, and Sting. The Horsemen were going to join forces with Luger and Sting. Now, they did an interview with what was supposed to be the WCW team, but Sting wasn't there. And they were trying to figure out, where's Sting? And then Benoit and McMichael come in, and Mongo's, you know, talking shit. He's like, I told you, the rats have already jumped the ship. And Luger's just like, guys, he's not here for the interview. And obviously, they, you know, they did the whole thing with Sting. Here's the thing. WCW was actually a couple weeks away from doing a tour in Japan. Now, Sting would actually explain this the next week on Nitro, that he was actually coming back. He was flying into Atlanta to do from Japan because he was doing appearances that he was told to go do. He was told to go do the press for that event. He was told to travel to Japan. So he was coming back. On the way back, he happened to see, because it was on, I think, like they had the TV in the limo or whatever, because, you know, back then, that's when they started putting TVs in limos.
Yeah.
So he saw that the NWO had a bogus Sting. So in his promo that he cut the night after Fall Brawl, he said, he goes, you know what? So he's like, instead of going to the arena, I figured everybody was going to be fired up. So I just went home. So I decided not to go there because I figured everything would, you know, I give everything a few days to calm down. So, like, and the funny thing is that, like, everybody knew he wasn't going to be there. I mean, I get it, like, you have to do it for storyline purposes and all that. But you couldn't just stay at the beginning of the show. You had to run this angle, which broke the hearts of a lot of little kids. You couldn't just say at the beginning, it's so, oh, Sting's not here, he's in Japan. Bischoff had no problem telling us every other night when the guys were in Japan.
I'm glad, I mean, it was good, though. It was good because you needed to believe that that was Sting.
Yeah.
I know your little heart didn't like it when you were a kid, but the fact that it made you cry means they did their job.
Yeah.
That was great. Sting came out, you think Sting's heel, and he turns on him. You've seen other people turn for the NWO, so you believe it, and you're like, holy shit, Sting's a bad guy. And even, like, Arn's promo really made me, like, get into the sink my teeth in it when he's like, the one constant. About WCW, and that would never switch. We never thought would switch was Sting. And now Sting has fucked us, basically. That's what he's saying. And it was just such a good, intense, like, caring promo to where, like, immediately after this, it's like, I want to watch War Games. Like, this is good.
Right.
The promo, like Clint said, the promos made the show over the wrestling on this one.
Yes. I mean, can't really take away from it, because this was a good match from like, what they showed.
Yeah, well, it's two guys that can go very well. The one thing I will say, and I was going to get into it later about the main event, because Macho Man has to run out too.
Yeah.
Just like Luger runs out. This is around the time that they didn't have a Titantron or the whatever they call it.
It was called the Turnertron.
Okay. The Turnertron. And the big...
Turner.
Right, makes sense. But...
they didn't have screens to show any. So the crowd does not know that Sting turned heel.
Right.
Right? The crowd does not know, and all this stuff is happening in the backstage, and all the crowd is seeing is a match happening, the bell ringing, them wrestling, and then a guy leaving. And then they don't see anything else. They just see Luger run out, and then Savage and the main event run out, and then the show's over.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that they had the fucking Trons for the pay-per-views and for the Clash of Champions.
Yeah. But it's like, how fucking ridiculous. And then by the end, when they're cutting the big promos with Flair and Arner at the announcing booth, the crowd's booing. And it's like, why are they booing? This is an all right show. But then it's like, oh, they didn't fucking see it. They paid their money, bought their ticket, and got to see half a match, and then someone run away. Poor bastards. So it makes sense why they started to implement the Turnertron more into Nitro after this.
Yeah. Well, they kind of had to. And Bischoff... I mean, Bischoff had even said the other day, because they actually covered this on 83 Weeks, he's just like, it wasn't because of this, but this was like one of the driving forces. He goes, because unfortunately we did that to the fans a lot, and like it was starting to actually, like, not necessarily reflect the ratings, because they were still winning, but people were getting pissed. They would actually tune over because... they would actually tune into Monday Night Football. I was like, you know what? Fuck both wrestling shows. We want to watch football.
Well, the people watching it from their TV are getting the whole experience. I feel bad for the poor assholes that bought a ticket.
Yeah.
Well, actually,
rumor has it is that, and Bischoff denied this, rumor has it is that the building actually offered the fans a refund.
Yeah, but he said no.
He said no. I think mainly because it came from Dave Meltzer.
Actually, I'm going to throw this to Eric. I want your opinion, Eric. What did you think about the fake Sting shit and the limo and all that?
Just rewatching it, I thought it was all right. I mean, knowing that we know happened, just, and I thought it was all right. You could tell it was fake. It was a fake Sting.
You couldn't. Not at 10 years old, I could tell. Well, obviously, I could tell now because I know. But here's the thing. Like, the dead giveaway would have been this. Sting had black hair. The real Sting.
Yeah.
This asshole that came out of the... that came out of the limo, his hair was brown.
You're right.
I mean, they made him dye his hair later, but... they waited 3 weeks for him to dye his hair. Which, by the way, the guy that played this fake Sting is Jeff Farmer, who was just Cobra.
Yeah.
By the way, the Cobra gimmick never got over.
Well, because that was another one that was supposed to be like Glacier, right? Mortal Kombat or no?
No, Cobra was a sniper.
Okay.
He was actually brought in to feud with Craig Pittman. Because he was a guy from Craig Pittman's past. And the blow-off match they had at Fall Brawl 95.
Yeah.
90 seconds.
Who won?
Pittman.
There you go.
And Pittman was a heel.
So moving on, Mysterio and Kidman had a two-minute showdown. I mean, two great guys that can move well. Kidman's a little green here, but there's not really much to say.
Yeah, and it sucks. I mean... yeah, Kidman was green here at the time, but, I mean, they would obviously have better matches, you know.
In the future.
Yeah.
But Billy showed that he could move. I mean, they just, no time. You can't have a classic in 2 minutes.
Right.
Now, the next match, this is what Eric was alluding to, the Public Enemy versus Barbarian and Ming. I thought this match had a lot of potential. I thought it could be really good. A lot of things fucked this match. They didn't give a shit about it. This was one of the things, like, it was the longest match on the card, right?
Yeah.
I don't know how long Savage and Penta went, but that was one of the, it was one of the fucking longest matches on the card, and the whole time they're talking about the NWO, and then a leprechaun shows up, Braun the Leprechaun.
Yeah.
Who's not involved in the story, right?
No, he was a member of the Dungeon of Doom, well, kinda.
Were Barbarian and Ming in the Dungeon of Doom?
Yes.
Okay. So he shows up, a fucking leprechaun shows up, there you go, he paved the way for Hornswoggle. And then,
I have not seen this very often. They go to an interview with the Horsemen. And
your reaction was priceless when we were watching this.
I was like, what the fuck? Because we're in the middle of a match.
I thought they stopped the match. It's like,
no.
Wait,
the match
are they in the middle of a match?
Yeah, and then they did a split screen so you could see both. But it's like, what the fuck's going on? Let them wrestle. These old assholes can talk after. Let them fucking wrestle. Like, how are you going to do an interview in the middle of a match? It just basically says,
exactly,
what you're watching doesn't matter. You should pay attention to this instead. That bothers me. I didn't like that.
My first reaction was like, wait, did something happen to my... Did something happen that they cut off portion of the match and it just went straight to interview? It's like, what the hell happened?
Yeah.
They just didn't give a shit.
I mean,
it could have been the best match in the card, and then they didn't give a shit.
Right. What are you saying?
I said it was kind of like, I was kind of zoning in and out with them talking. Like, I did enjoy what I did. I didn't notice it because when I tune out like the NWO and try to just focus on my own, the match itself was fine. And then I did notice the same thing, like, did this really just happen, or is it just something going on with, like, people not messing up with my TV that they want to cut things out of the matches like they used to do? But no.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's how it was aired, though. And it's ridiculous.
Can you imagine that happening today?
Oh, people would have a fucking shit fit.
Yeah. And then you have Conan, Big Bubba, Hugh Morris, and Max come out, and they just talk about the Giant joining the NWO, and Bubba called out Glacier, and Conan didn't even mention his match for the Mexican Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah. Did Gene even try to plug it?
No. They didn't even talk about that he's fighting Hoovy or anything. It's just the NWO. Like, I understand. I know it was a big story, but it's like, other stuff on the card should get a little attention if you're showing that on national TV.
Well, and here's the thing. When they were interviewing the Horsemen about what happened, Benoit wasn't going to be part of War Games anyway because he had to wrestle Jericho.
Yeah. You would know.
Not a fucking thing mentioned about that.
No.
Jericho wasn't even on the episode.
No, but he was on the week before.
Oh, okay.
And it was funny because in the main event, John Tenta, his theme music would later become Chris Jericho.
Correct.
But, I mean, the main event isn't really a main event at all. It's John Tenta and Randy Savage. I love John Tenta. Love me some big man. Big Earthquake fan. Randy Savage, one of the greatest of all time. He will definitely, he better make the fucking top 20 of all time list.
I actually get to participate in the contest this time. This is Eric running this.
This is my project.
Savage hit a couple flying elbows. Then Teddy Long comes out and says that the NWO's here.
Which, by the way, I never understood as a kid. It's like, all right, why is Teddy Long coming out here?
Yeah. It would have been great.
I forgot he was in WCW.
Savage, player. We're going to the parking lot. We're having a tag team match. that would have been funny. There wasn't too much here to sink your teeth in because then they chased the limo. They find nothing. They find spray cans in the limo, right?
Yeah.
The NWO is not there. And then, like, you just say it the way you said it yesterday, what they were doing.
They were spray painting a limousine, a black limousine, with yellow spray paint in the rain. Again, yellow spray paint. Yellow, which is not... yellow actually does show up on black a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, not like well, but it does kind of show up on a little bit. In the rain. By the way, spray paint does wash off pretty easy. and And you saw it dripping down the window.
Yeah, exactly. And the funny thing, we forgot to actually mention this when Steiner was out, after Luger had gotten beat up, they went back out to the parking lot. It was Luger and Steiner and Brian Knobbs and both Canadians and Scott Norton and Bubba. And everybody's out there pouring rain. Who's got the umbrella? Rick Steiner.
Yeah,
toughest guy out there is the one that wanted to shield himself from the rain.
Yeah, he was just out there with a little light blue umbrella. It was funny.
But, like, here, nobody needed – well, it had stopped raining by then. But nobody needed an umbrella here. And then, like, they're just spray paint. Like, I could not – and they're like, oh, look at the unity here from WCW. It's like they're tagging a car.
Yeah, and it's just a bunch of, like, no-name – I mean, there's some big guys, too. But, like, a lot of fucking undercard assholes.
It's the Horseman and Savage and Rick Steiner. And then all the guys that were doing jobs.
Yeah, and they're all just sitting in the parking lot, just standing there and fucking, like, looking around. Like, where is he? And it's like, this is the dumbest shit ever. I mean, I like the Sting moment. I thought that was cool. I thought they did that well. But this was like, just let Savage beat Tenta and give the fans a main event. Why have him do all this shit? Didn't make much sense to me. And then, obviously, they did Arn Anderson came out and did a very good promo on commentary. And you could see that even before all the shit happened, Flair and Bischoff still hated each other. Because he's like, you gotta let me talk! You gotta let me talk!
Yeah. Bischoff's trying to get all these words out, and Flair and Anderson are just looking at him like, shut the fuck up!
Yeah, he's trying to give this big monologue, and they just keep interrupting him. And he's like, he tried 5 times. And then at the end, Flair's like, you let me talk? It's like, you've been talking the whole fucking time. Let Bischoff say a word.
Yeah.
But it was funny.
And by the way, this is actually around – this was right after – now, for anybody that doesn't know, from 94 to about fall of 95, Flair was the head booker.
Yeah.
In WCW.
Okay.
However, he was starting to have problems with Hogan and Savage. Those problems being Hogan never wanted to do a job for Flair.
Yeah.
So Flair said, fuck it. I'm done. Somebody else can take over. And Kevin Sullivan did.
Yeah.
Now, in early 96, Flair dropped the world title to Savage on January 22nd. January 23rd, the next night, Flair was teaming with the Giant at Clash of Champions to face Hogan and Savage in a tag. And the finish was Flair was going to get hit with the big boot, the leg drop, and that was going to be it, right?
Yeah.
Flair said, if you make me go out there and do the fucking job, I'm done. Like, I will leave. Like, I'm not doing a job 2 nights in a row. So they went to Hogan and said, hey, you know, we're going to switch the finish. You guys are going to put Flair over. Doesn't work for me, brother. And you can't beat the Giant.
No.
So Savage is just like, oh, yeah, I'll do the job. Because Savage was the only one that actually, you know, didn't mind doing business.
Yeah.
Well, Flair didn't mind doing business if it was for the right reason.
Yeah, but at that time, they were kind of fucking him over. Like, Savage is, like, Flair was wrestling Conan sometimes and some shit. Like,
he had to wrestle Conan at their biggest show of the year, that Bash at the Beach, you know, where the NWO formed, by the way.
Yeah.
And Flair's wrestling for the U.S. title, which he did not need.
Yeah.
He's wrestling Conan.
Yeah. I will agree. Like, I feel like a lot of WWE's talk about WCW and Eric Bischoff. I don't mind. I think Eric Bischoff's a legend. I don't mind him. He's not the slimy, squeaky, you know, slimy scumbag that WWE's tried to make him be. I think WWE just won, so they get to change the narrative however they want because they won. So who else is going to say different? I thought Bischoff was kind of a badass, and I thought he was, like, good at what he did. He made the company a lot of money. He got him nice ratings. Maybe he was too buddy-buddy with some of the guys. But the one thing I will agree, his treatment of Ric Flair, and I think he'll even say that, was pretty poor, at least booking-wise.
Yeah. I mean, they're best friends now.
Yeah, they're good friends now, and they got over it. But you can – I don't blame Flair for hating Bischoff for as long as he did, because that was a legendary career that almost got fucking –
you know, made to look stupid because of Bischoff's booking. You either let him retire or you keep him on top. You don't just have him be the second match in. You don't have Flair do filler shit. WWE did
when did
bit.
Bischoff join the NWO?
What?
Bischoff joined the NWO on November 18th.
Nitro?
Yes.
Okay. I never knew when he did. I was always wondering when that happened.
Now,
thank
depending
you.
On what I actually had planned for November, which I kind of already forgot, we might actually do that Nitro. Because that's another...
Awesome.
Like, that's another...
I was planning on watching it sometime. So.
Next week, we're off.
And then the week after that, WWE.
Yep.
The WCW company retrospective.
So we're just going to be watching a lot of WCW these next 2 weeks.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, which actually, to be honest with you, like, I'm actually not going to complain about that because I do enjoy it.
Yeah, Clintus might be pissed, but...
Clintus either going to demand a lot of money or just quit.
Yeah, I want to need to get paid. That's a lot of WCW.
we'll up your bonus.
But to be honest, we haven't done a lot of WCW lately, so.
No. I'm excited to watch more companies. We will be talking about other companies, too, in the future.
Yeah.
But let's get final thoughts on this, guys, and give this show a rating as a whole and get the hell out of here. Eric, I'm going to start with you.
I thought it was an okay show. As I said, alluded to earlier, I thought everything was surrounded by Sting and NWO. I don't think they gave a shit about the matches or the other people. It was overkill. Rewatching it was overkill, but probably back then as a kid, it was probably cool. But rewatching it, I would give this a 4 out of 10. And that's being nice.
All right. Clintus, you're going next.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to give this show a rating of a 2, and that's all because of the fake Sting. The matches, the story going being a go home show to a fall brawl, not having all the wrestlers there that's supposed to have matches, build up the storyline, and just focus on the NWO and the Sting throughout the whole show. It's just a total buzzkill, especially going into a pay per view. You just can't do that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it didn't feel like a go-home show at all.
All right, Dougie, I'm going to have your back. I would actually give this show a 7 because
okay.
I got enjoyment out of it. I think, yes, they focus way too much on the story, but I disagree with the other thing. I thought the story was strong. I thought the whole Savage thing was, or the whole Sting thing was strong. I think that everything that they were doing with the NWO at that time, it was overkill, yeah, but it was good shit. That's why 10, 15 million people were tuning in every week. I liked what I saw.
But I'm not saying that it's the fact that you focused on the NWO for a whole 2 damn hours. That's what got on my
mind. That's my problem, too.
I mean, besides that, what else do you have on that show that's especially saying, gee, I want to watch this again? Nothing but the NWO. I mean, that's all it really was.
There's no
I
other stories.
I agree and I understand. But they're also, the story was so hot. It was so hot. If WWE had a story that hot, like, you guys forget, you remember them 99 Raws? Stone Cold would be out there for 5 seconds of the fucking show. Because he was over. Because he was the biggest
star. Yeah, you got a point there.
He'd drink a beer, he'd go out and kick somebody's ass, he'd go out this and say fuck you to Vince, and then he'd go out again. Some of those like big moments that we see from Vince and Austin that you see clips of over and over again, some of them happened on the same show.
Okay.
Because they would do it a lot. So, I mean, I just think the story was strong, so they committed to the story. I understand where you guys are coming from, though, and I get it, and I do agree. But I like the story, so it didn't bother me as much.
And that's the thing, and I do agree with them, too, but I'm going to kind of – and I'm not going to give the date. I'm just going to say if it was a Raw in 99.
Yeah.
They start the show with the contract signing with McMahon and Austin for the full for the fully loaded First Blood match between Austin and Undertaker.
Yes.
To where if Undertaker lost, McMahon would be barred from television. So they start that. Undertaker comes out, beats up Austin, bloodies him up, stabs him in the head with the pen. So they sign the contract on Austin's blood. Okay? Take him to the hospital. He comes back a few segments later, stuns Jeff Jarrett. Okay?
I remember that.
Throws him out of the ring. Cuts a promo, says, I want both The Undertaker and Kane's asses. Because Kane somehow got involved in that thing at the beginning of the night, too. Said, I want both their asses. Big Show comes out and says, Steve, don't do that. You need me. Like, I'll be your partner. Okay, cool. So they said, so we're talking 3 or 4 segments of Austin being involved.
Yeah.
Because then they had the main event match.
Yeah. And it was regular back then. I mean, even look back at, you know, your beloved Summer of Punk, Eric. A lot of those Raws, Punk was out there 6, 7, 8 segments of the show. Because that was their big guy.
You had to also pick a story. It's like a sitcom, right?
Yeah, you got a main story and you got your subplot.
Yeah, exactly. So you have you have your sitcom, and it's like, okay, this is what the episode is going to be about. All right, you have your subplots, but you have to focus on your main story. This episode of Nitro, the main story was what happened with the NWO and Sting.
Yes, and is it overkill? Absolutely. Is it too much? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But if you're invested in that story as a fan, I do think you will enjoy this episode.
Yeah, I mean, the wrestling wasn't great. I mean, I'm gonna give the show a 6 because of the story.
Yeah.
Okay? Because the story had me hooked as a little kid. Again, I cried when it happened. Okay?
Yeah.
For anybody that doesn't know the story, I'll go short version, right? For anybody that doesn't know the story. Was watching the episode. I see Sting come out, attack Luger. I was a huge Sting guy.
Yeah.
All right, a huge Sting fan. I fucking lost it. I was just like, oh, my God. Because I was actually watching the show on Mom and Dad's room.
Yeah.
Because they would let me watch wrestling there. Because Dad didn't want it on the TV in the living room. Dick. So I come out, and I'm screaming, I'm bawling. Oh, my God, Daddy, Sting joined the NWO. And I'm just, like, tears are running down my face.
Yeah.
And Dad's just looking at me like, what in the hell is going on?
I said, Sting joined the NWO.
He goes, is this wrestling? I said, yeah. He's like, what the fuck? And he does not know how to calm me down. The phone rings. It's Grandpa. You know, it's Papa. And Dad picks up the phone and goes, hello? And I guess Papa's on the other line. He goes, is Dougie watching Nitro? He goes, yeah. And something just fucking happened. I don't understand it here. Hands me the phone. And I'm like, Bob, did you see what happened? I can't believe they joined the NWO. He goes, it's okay. He goes, I doubt that was even Sting.
Yeah.
I said, what? And
you're very committed to the character of young Dougie.
And Bob is just like, oh, wait, never mind. I don't think I'm supposed to tell you that. Everything's going to be okay. He's just like, are you good?
I think I'll be okay.
So then, you know, hang up the phone and all that. You know, I love you too. Talk to you tomorrow. And then, like, that was it. So I never understood that as that could not be Sting.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know, like, how they did that shit. But, yeah, I fucking lost it. Like, because that's how much I believed in what I was watching. I mean, I cried when they got that, when the wrestlers got the hell beat out of him at Disney. When the NWO did that attack.
Yeah.
I almost shit my pants when Ray Jr. got thrown into that trailer.
All right, so we got a 6, a 7, a 2, and a 4. This was a blast, guys. Like we said, there will be a bye week next week, but we will be back for our WCW retrospective. And then the following week, our not AEW, something else? Or AEW?
No, AEW then, and then And then on October 8th, we're watching a Raw.
Yes. And then the next week, we will be kind of culminating the build of AEW and WCW and doing a comparison.
Yeah. So next week of bye, then WCW retrospective, then AEW, and then, like I said, October 8th, we're going to be watching a Raw because I felt like we kind of needed a break with all the crap we were watching.
Yeah.
So why? And by the way, the Raw we're going to be watching is October, I believe, 9th, 2000.
Hell yeah.
And it's going to be the Raw where we find out who the son of a bitch was that ran over Stone Cold Steve Austin.
That's my favorite episode.
That's your favorite episode?
I mean,
yeah. That ending promo was awesome.
Yeah. What?
One of my favorites.
Getting it from The Rock is awesome?
Yeah. So, and Eric, what were you getting ready to say?
I was going to say, I just want to say that rewatching these stuff, you get a different perspective as when you were watching it back as a kid. So I just wanted to, that's why I kind of have a different perspective now as an adult.
Right.
I just can't believe that Clint is shitting on the NWO but giving praise to Rikishi's heel.
But Clint, you better make sure you have that night off then so you can be on here with us and talk to us.
Yeah, request off the Clint.
That's one of the worst heel turns in the history of wrestling.
It's not one of the worst, but I think it's the funniest thing, and it's just one of me and my best friend, we talk about it all the time. We have a great laugh of it. We can just watch it, and we just laugh at the whole ending. That's why
right.
I love
it. And that's the thing, is that like, and again, that's another example of a TV show with a continuing story.
Yeah.
Because Foley did like 10 segments.
Yeah. Trying to find out who it was.
Yeah, trying to do this. And again, and this one of the reasons why I picked it is because we're coming up on the anniversary.
Yeah.
And two, I really wanted to do a Raw. And three, it's another example of a continuation of a story. So the wrestling may not have mattered, but the story.
Well, if you think of it as a continuation of the story, you have to think of it as like part two, because it really started when Austin was suspended from SmackDown.
Right. So, again, it's a continuation. So it's a story that just kept going, and it's like, okay, we're hooked in. Obviously, we're going to stay tuned to the end of the show to find out who the fuck did this.
And we'll get into that much more next time on Unscripted Wrestling.
Yep, and we'll see everybody in 2 weeks.
Later, guys.
Later.
Later.
Later.